eating Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Aaron Martin. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. I had to actually struggle to see
that. You're not listening to the Idiot Boxers, the definitive podcast about television. You are listening to the Fat Guys at the Movies. We have Neil is out again for a week getting prepped for South by Southwest, or as they like to say in Austin, South by. So I brought in Merrill. He hasn't been on. What you pointed out that you haven't,
I haven't been on since the last time I was on was when we did Edge of Darkness in January of 2010.
Yeah, which was like
over a
like
year ago.
Was 150 something.
It was episode 150 on that episode.
So he bugged me enough, and I said, fine,
I'll let you I on bugged the show you, again. Bugged you. No. I came on because you were spouting some hate towards me that I'll get into later.
Whatever. Okay. But anyways, you can get a hold of the show at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can reach us on iTunes. Just search Fat Guys at the Movies, and this and many podcasts show up. You can find us on Facebook. If you go on facebook.com/FGATM, which is Fat Guys in the Movies, FGATM, or search Fat Guys at the Movies, search the whole term. Find our page, like our page, you can subscribe to it and get news feeds, and anytime something new goes on the site, whether it's an interview or a podcast or a review or something like that. You want to email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. We've got one of those. We'll play in a later segment. So welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, Merrill. This is really only the second. It's so weird because you and I do podcasting every 2 weeks anyways for the Idiot Boxers.
And we're talking like every day throughout those 2 weeks.
Yeah, and so it's even though you haven't been on the Fat Guy show in
I've infected
a year. Infected? Is that what you said? Infected or affected?
Infected.
Yeah.
Like, I think I've infected your life like a... I don't know.
Both terms would be accurate. Anyways, this segment we're going to talk a little bit about the Oscars, and mm-hmm. I mean, not too much about them. It'll just be this segment for some reactions. We already talked about the Oscars last week with Kelly Gingery. Mm-hmm. This time, kind of what you're. Nothing really happened on the show.
Nothing really happened, but I will say this: for playing the drunk high stoner, I think James Franco did a great job as host.
Yeah. Yeah, he was channeling his character from Pineapple Express, wasn't he?
I mean, there's some funny jokes. Like Anne Hathaway said, it was like, you know, it used to be you get naked, you get nominated, and
yeah.
Nothing. So.
Yeah, she didn't. What's funny is, one thing I said is, because I did some post-Oscar interviews with radio stations, and they asked what was it. Did it work? Did James Franco and Anne Hathaway work? And I'm like, well, here's the thing. I don't necessarily have a problem with them. But putting them, young, good-looking, hip stars, into this mold is sort of like taking Danica Patrick and putting her into, like, an old 1940s stock car. It's only going to perform as well as that stock car performs. She'll look great in it, but it's not exactly modern NASCAR. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing with this. It was the same old ceremony. It was 4 hours long, had all this, you know, padding on the back and all that kind of stuff. So
much just padding. Padding is the better word. Just always so much fluff that didn't need to exist in the ceremony. Like, it doesn't need to be 4 hours long.
No, it does. I've always said, I've said this before. I think I said this last week. If they would just make it 90 minutes, burn through the awards, and have, like, Ricky Gervais as host, and let him do whatever he wants to and give him no oversight, everyone would have watched. It would have had 110 million people watching, like, the Super Bowl did.
Well, I tell you this, though. For next year, they better be calling up Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law, because the two of them, when they did their, whatever they presented, the two of them were amazing together.
Well, people were also saying the same thing about Kevin Spacey, and
which,
of course, it was nice
to
have
Billy Crystal. I didn't catch that one, because I was, like, watching on and off.
Well, I think you need somebody who speaks to that audience. I always thought Hugh Jackman did a good job because he's used to doing Broadway and that sort of thing, and he's used to being on stage. But you know, James Franco's a great actor, and Anne Hathaway is a good actress and looks beautiful and everything, but they just seemed out of their element.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the we're not going to run down any because a lot of these were very predictable. people, you know, winning, obviously, Colin Firth for the King's Speech. I know you had a bit of an axe to grind with the Academy.
Well, like on, every single person on Twitter apparently does. Apparently, like every prediction and every article and every report said David Fincher's got it. It's David Fincher's year. He's got it locked up for director. He might, probably most likely was not going to win Best Picture, but he's got it locked up for Best Director. And then out of nowhere, Tom Hooper?
I don't think Tom Hooper came out of nowhere.
But
I mean, here's the thing.
Twitter exploded when that announcement came out.
Well, because it's Twitter.
Like my tweet deck would not stop refreshing.
Were you really that surprised?
Yeah, I was.
I mean, I put my money on Fincher, but here's the thing. Here's a little hint on myself. I will always, almost always, go for the split vote. I mean, unless I really think it's going to go. Like last year, I was like, no, Catherine Bigelow and Hurt Locker's both going to win. But if ever there's really kind of an iffy situation, in my opinion, I'd go for the split vote. Because if it does happen that way, I look like a genius. So,
what was your prediction?
I predicted that Fincher would win. Now, see, coming out of nowhere, if like David Russell won for The Fighter, that to me would be coming out of nowhere. Okay. Because nobody had him pegged to win for Best Director. But, you know, if a movie's going to win Best Picture, by default, the director of that movie is really in the running with anybody else for Best Director, don't you think?
Yeah. Just
you're just mad.
I am. The Social Network was my favorite movie of 2010. And just
Angry Piglet.
Really? We're going public with that now?
I think, didn't we go public with that on
No, well, sort of, but no one knows what it meant. And I guess they still don't know what it means.
They still don't know. Twitter me if you really want to find out what it means.
People are going to Twitter you now.
Well, that's awesome. The only other one, the other big surprise in sort of that top six was Melissa Leo, The Fighter. I really thought she was torpedoing herself with the personal campaign.
No, I don't think that was, I think that was a huge, that was more of a lock than Fincher, I think.
Just really?
Like, yeah. Everyone was saying she's got it. The best part is now, Kevin Smith gets to put on all his Red State promos, Melissa Leo, Academy Award winner Melissa Leo.
Whatever. I don't know. I'm just tired. I'm tired of Melissa Leo. And maybe it's because I saw Conviction and The Fighter right next to each other. And it's like, it's the same character, only louder, you know, in The Fighter. And I don't know. I'm so tired of people playing white trash. To me, people playing white trash and then saying that's an award-winning performance is like people playing somebody with a mental disorder, and suddenly, by default, that becomes an Academy Award-nominated thing. It's like, oh, he played an autistic man.
And then, you know. And then, of course, Ben Stiller gets snubbed in 2008.
I know a lot of people were upset that, on Twitter, people were upset that Alice in Wonderland got it for best costume design and best art director. I don't know. I thought those were at least appropriate.
The line movie. I kept seeing over and over again on Twitter was, Alice in Wonderland has two Oscars, Wolfman has one, True Grit, nothing. That makes total sense.
Yeah, that happens. I'm just going to give one little shout out here because we only got about 25 seconds left in this segment. A big shout out to the guys who did blah, 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 God of Love, which is the live action short that won. That is a great, great short film. If you haven't had a chance to see it, go check it out. So good for them. And I guess that's about it. We're going to talk reviews in the next segment, so stay with us and we'll be right back.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. You're now in the famous segment.
That's right. We're going to be doing some movie reviews. We're going to burn through these. We actually have four movies. And
I have not seen any of them.
That's okay. Neil doesn't anyways. I'm pretty sure Neil hasn't seen these either. But let's jump right in. The first one is The Adjustment Bureau, in which Matt Damon finds a woman by fate, but soon discovers there are greater forces keeping them apart.
What is this?
We are the people who make sure things happen according to plan.
We monitor the entire world.
Can't outrun your fate, David.
You've just seen behind a curtain that you weren't even supposed to know existed. This is your plan, and we're determined to keep it that way. You bumped into a woman this morning on the bus.
What does that have to do with anything?
Your path through the world is supposed to have been adjusted. You weren't ever supposed to see her again.
If you truly love her, just walk away.
Are you at all interested in seeing this?
No. I love Matt Damon. I mean, I would see it from Matt Damon, but that's it. Wow. You know, it's just... I remember, because actually this movie
I watched anything with Matt Damon.
It's never a good sign when a movie that's supposed to come out in August of last year gets pushed to March of this year, of the following year.
After having seen it, and you know, let you know, I did like it, but after having seen it, I will say it is not surprising, because I'm not sure if they... I don't think they're necessarily marketing this properly, and B, I don't know how I would market it. I really don't know what.
When you say marketing properly, you mean they're pulling a bait and switch on the trail, like with Splice?
No, not as much as it's sort of like, it's kind of a hard movie to explain without, because it kind of has two different things going on in it, in two different it has two different moods that work in the movie. But if you try to distill it down to trailer length, they seem to clash. Okay, and I described it to my wife as saying, because I think she'd like it. It's sort of almost, it feels like it would have been made in the 80s, sort of like around when they remade the Twilight Zone episodes, because it's very Twilight Zone-y, because it has this Men in Black kind of thing going on through it. But it feels like it would have been made in the 80s, and it's this really neat speculative fiction concept, and it's hung on this very... Sort of,
it's based on a short story, but I think Philip K. Dick.
Well, yeah, but see, Philip K. Dick is much more dark than what... I mean, this is not like... It doesn't feel like a Dick story. It feels like a much lighter, fluffier thing. It feels more Rod Serling than P.K. Dick. But it's hung on this very sort of cheesy hook.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. It definitely works in the movie, I thought. But it's this sort of this little bit... not corny, but a little bit more almost heartfelt, but... That would seem to clash with the overall appearance of, but I thought it worked out really well. Matt Damon does a great job. Emily Blunt does a good job in it. It was a really enjoyable movie. I thought it was neat. It wasn't terribly unpredictable or anything, but it worked. If you like Twilight Zone-y kind of stuff, I'd say go see this. It rocked.
So it rocked.
It rocked.
Rocked.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right,
let's move on to
next. Rango. Johnny Depp stars as a chameleon who wanders into an old western town where he is made the unlikely sheriff.
Who exactly are you?
Name's Rango. What is this?
That there's Rango. He ain't afraid of none of you.
Is that right?
You see them, Mr. Rango? People have to believe in something. Pick it up. Your destiny awaits.
You are going to save us, aren't you?
Count on it, little sister.
Now, I'm interested because the trailers, in my opinion, for this movie were awful.
Yeah.
They were atrocious. I watched the trailers and I was like, there's no sense of a good anything here. The animation I thought was really creepy and not appealing, and the story looked really stupid, so... How was it in actuality?
I enjoyed it. It's not awesome. There are some people out there who have seen early screenings that are like, greatest movie ever. Give it the best animated Oscar already.
Like the one I read was like, Pixar should be shaking in their boots.
Yeah.
Like,
well, really? Pixar's releasing Cars.
Granted,
too.
This year's Cars.
Yeah. So I think if anything has a chance of, you know, sort of.
Well, they lost the Oscar for Cars 1.
I know. So. Yeah. To Happy Feet. But this one's clever. It's cute. This is what I like about Rango, is. It's not just a retelling of a fairy tale. I mean, it's sort of like Despicable Me, where it's a totally different story that you haven't seen before, and it really is thinking outside of the box. It's the animation is really cool. It's very detailed, but it's very muted because it has that old Western tone to it. But it's not for the littlest kids. If you have a 4-year-old, don't take a 4-year-old to see this movie. You know, if you're talking 8, 9, 10, they're going to really appreciate it. And there's stuff in there that parents are going to get, and they're going to be like, no way is a child going to get any of these, half of these jokes in there. But that's good. That's what makes good movies. It has this kind of adult sensibility that Gore Verbinski puts into the movie.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a neat story about it's a Western kind of story where he comes to town, he becomes a sheriff, he has to stop the bad guys from doing whatever, a corrupt mayor, blah, blah, blah. And it works. It really, really clicks. And I had a lot of fun with it. It's not perfect, but it's a neat movie. I say this is another one I'm going to say rocks. It's a good week. And then, is it? Are you sure? And then we have Beastly, a modern adaptation of Beauty and the Beast, all with beautiful people.
My dad always said how much people like you is directly proportional to what you look like.
Steer clear of the witch.
Wow, looks are important to you.
They're important to everyone, except you, clearly.
Imagine life without them. You have a year to find someone to love you.
What?
Or stay like this forever.
Like what?
As aggressively unattractive outside as you are inside.
Do you have any desire to see this at all?
No, actually, I'll be honest. The trailer looks I am curious because it's from CBS Films.
Yeah.
And CBS Films has so far three awful movies. One really good movie.
Wait, what's the one really good movie?
The Mechanic.
Oh, was that that was CBS Films.
That was CBS Films.
You're right. That was really good.
So they're so far 3-1.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Faster
was... One and three, rather.
Faster was way better than Extraordinary Measures and The Backup Plan.
I hated Faster.
Have you seen The Backup Plan?
I have not.
You need to recalibrate your measuring stick, sir. So
I thought Faster was atrocious.
Here's the problem with Beastly. It is if it feels like a Disney Channel original movie or like a Nickelodeon movie that you'd catch on TV, and it just doesn't feel like it's worthy of even being in the theater. And the script is it's actually adapted from a book, but the script feels like somebody watched The Social Network and was like, ooh, listen to that poppy dialogue. Isn't that cool? I want to do that too. And then just failed at it. Because they try to do this sort of fast-paced, witty sort of, you know, how like The Social Network or like something like Juno were sort of hyper-real and no one talks like that. They're trying to do that here. And it is just, it's so bad. And they don't know what they're doing. And like Alex Pettifer is a good-looking guy, but he's not that good of an actor. He's passable. Like I Am Number 4, he worked in that. But this one, he's trying to emote and he doesn't. And then you have Vanessa Hudgens, who's kind of peaked with High School Musical. That's like that's the pinnacle of her acting ability. And then you got this. And then here's this thing. I just have an axe to grind on this. I cannot stand movies where they have this message of saying it's inner beauty that counts. It is not what's on the outside. And every flippin' person in the movie is gorgeous. Even the background.
That's always nice. Like, then they have to, like, you can tell they have, like, fly-in models from, like, Sweden.
Yeah, they're like, oh, this is our high school graduating class. And you're like, are you kidding me? This looks like an Abercrombie and Fitch magazine. even what's her name? Mary-Kate Olsen, who plays the witch, who curses him. She's like, oh, I'm just into who I am. And she's, like, more fashion conscious because she's got this, like, really exotic goth look to her. And
based on the trailers, based on the trailers alone, Alex Pettifer, when he becomes the creepy guy, he starts looking creepy, he still looks pretty good.
Yeah, he's like the best looking monster in the world.
He's got these really like perfectly placed tattoos that make him look kind of cool.
Yeah, he looks like a biker dude. And I mean, if you really, give him like a nose, give him like an armpit right on his face. That's what you want to look ugly. But no, he's the best looking monster ever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this one sucked. We got to do the last one is Take Me Home Tonight. A group of college students try to figure out what they want to do with their lives in the fall of 1988.
Matthew, the summer's over. I want to hear your plan.
I guess my plan is to keep working at Suncoast Video until I figure out what I want to do with my life.
We just think you have such potential. You could be an astronaut.
Oh, problem solved. I'll just be an astronaut.
You are not going to believe who was just in here. Tori Frederiking.
Don't I know you? It's me, Tori.
Matt Franklin.
Where do you work?
I'm at Goldman Sachs.
Amazing! You're going to trick her into liking you. And then you're going to be like, it's me.
They didn't screen this for us.
They didn't.
No, they did. They're doing a Thursday night screening, but we're
recording. Are they doing it for you? So I guess I can't get preempted suck then.
Yeah,
can
but I can't talk much about it. Do you have anything you want to say about this? Because we can talk about it.
I don't know what I'm going to catch. I'll probably catch it on DVD.
If we want to talk, we can talk a little bit more about it in the next segment.
Okay.
2 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Meryl, did you have anything you wanted to say? Wow. Do you have anything else you want to say?
I need to curse. I can't go like an hour without cursing.
Angry piglet. All right. Is there anything else you want to say about Take Me Home Tonight?
I'm just interested because, like, Topher Grace really hasn't gotten a lot of starring roles, like, since he's kind of gone off that 70s show. He had Spider-Man, but that wasn't a starring role.
He's always had stuff that he's tried at. Like, you know, he was in Valentine's Day. Yeah, he was in that, but he was in, like, Win a Date with Tad Hamilton. He was in that. And there was another one. What was the one other one he did that was, like, a romance? And it was, like, Company in the Company or...
I know what you're talking about. I don't remember the name.
It was with Dennis Quaid, wasn't it?
That wasn't him. Because that's a different movie. I know what you're talking about. I'm dating the Boss's Daughter or something like that, right?
No, it wasn't Dennis Quaid in that one. My Boss's Daughter?
Yeah.
That was...
Was it Ashton Kutcher?
That was Ashton Kutcher and Tara Reid.
Mm.
And it was General Zod. Mm.
Then I'm not sure the one you're talking about then. But he hasn't really done a straight up comedy yet, and I don't know. Here's my worry, you know, just like what? Why does this movie have to be set in 85?
It's set in 88, actually.
It's 88, but why
you just hate the 80s.
Why is it? My question is, if you're gonna set in the 80s, there's gotta be a reason. You know, you can't just like otherwise you just like what's the point of setting in the 80s? Why can't you set the movie in like 2011? You know.
Well, why not? I don't quite get what you're saying. Is that if you're going to make it in 85,
if you're going to set in 88, then I would
better
like to
have on. You better have Reagan figure prominently.
What is it about 88 that means that is important to this character?
Why was Dazed and Confused set in the 70s?
I don't know. I haven't seen Dazed and Confused.
It's a nostalgia thing. It's because the people who made this show, like. Their heyday was in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nostalgia thing. I have to say, I mean, that's the only thing about this that appeals to me is the fact that, you know, it's sort of like, let's see how they do the 80s. Plus, is the people who did that 70s show were I think there were some of the writers on it, not David Trainer, who kind of ran the show, but other people who were involved with that 70s show, they're the ones behind this. So they are sort of going for that retro feel. And I've always heard the 70s show, somebody described it on one of the DVDs as that 70s show is not how it was in the 70s, but it's kind of how people remember the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, so it just crams all this pop culture and kitschy references in there. That was never real.
Well, it doesn't even cram them in. It's just sort of...
Yeah, it does kind of. I mean, if you look at the set dressing of Foreman's Basement,
mm-hmm.
especially the first couple seasons, it's like Star Wars reference this and that, and it just all the designs and the you know, even the kitchen appliances, the bowls and stuff like that. If you grew up in the 70s, you watch that 70s show, you're like, my mom had a bowl that was painted to look like a giant orange. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing with the deal is that's why it's an 88. It's just to give a retro feel, so it's not mm-hmm. just super bad again.
Yeah, just I don't know. We'll see. I'm probably just gonna wait till DVD on it because the trailer didn't really appeal to me, and I didn't even know about this movie until last week. So.
Well, and they're also like early 20s, and isn't like both Topher Grace and Anna Faris, aren't they in their 30s?
No, I think Topher Grace is still in his 20s.
If he's just barely.
Yeah. Yeah, he's holding on to him. But.
I mean, not. He's like in his. He's in his 20s. He's in his 20s the way that, like, you know, like Cher is in her 40s.
Yeah.
Not. But. No. One thing I do think is funny about the marketing, though, is if you look at the poster, it's like Topher Grace and Anna Faris and two other people that we're not going to mention. Because it's got like Teresa Palmer and Dan Fogler, but neither of them get their names on the poster, just their faces.
And is Anna Faris really it? Here's the thing. Like, every time I hear Anna Faris, at first I always have to be like, who? Oh, Scary Movie chick. That, yeah, okay.
I don't know. I mean, she's done enough. I mean, she'd like that. I mean, she has carried movies, like The House Bunny.
But I don't know if it's because of she's a recognizable name or just more. She's more of a recognizable
face. I'm pretty sure The House Bunny was. No, she's a recognizable name. Anna Faris is a recognizable name.
Okay.
At least as much as Topher Grace is.
True.
Mr. Finger on the Pulse of nothing.
Who do you think is going to win?
The box office. Well, let's talk about last weekend, because it's actually interesting.
Mr. 3D Champion, what opened in ninth place?
two things actually on 3D, since you brought it up. First of all, Drive Angry was a grindhouse niche market movie. I wasn't expecting it to hit as low as ninth place, but I was thinking fifth place would be its biggest hope. Because it's an R-rated, it's a grindhouse movie. It's like Grindhouse. I mean, that's really what it is. You know, you had Grindhouse, then you had Machete, and now you have just Drive Angry, which I loved, and I think you'd love Drive Angry. Here's the other thing with 3D. I think actually 3D, I don't think people are avoiding 3D movies. I think what they're doing is they're avoiding 3D prices. Because I was actually having a discussion with one of our local theater managers, and she says, yeah, people are asking for 2D versions of it, not because they don't like the 3D, but because they don't want to have to pay $5 extra to see the movie.
I think you're splitting hairs at that point. They're avoiding 3D movies. They're avoiding 3D movies, you know?
No, they're avoiding a movie because they don't want to pay $15 for it. They'll go see, they're going to the theater and they're like, I want to spend $10 to see this movie. Sorry, you can't. It's going to cost you $15. And they're like, what the fuck? That's what's happening. And I think it's not having an impact on like big releases or like kiddie releases or event movies. Transformers 3, it's not going to have a problem. You know, 4's not going to have a problem. It's the smaller releases that people are kind of.
Is Rango in 3D?
No, it's not. At least the screening I saw wasn't. What's funny, they did have things poking at you a couple times, which made me think, I'm surprised, were they going to release it in 3D?
I could have sworn at some point I remember seeing a poster that said 3D.
Maybe it's going to, I don't know, but they didn't show it to us in 3D. I don't know. Usually if it's in 3D, they show it in 3D. But no, I think that like the, for example, if you're going to see Drive Angry, and you for $15, you can go buy the DVD when it comes out in 2 months. And I think that's what's hurting it more. Whereas if you can get in for $4 or $5 at a discount matinee, that's definitely worth it. So I think that's what the price differential is hurting movies like, you know, the smaller movies, the ones that aren't the huge movies, the stuff like, you know, like Piranha or even My Soul to Take, which is awful, but Drive Angry. I think these are being hurt by higher prices because people just don't want to spend. We got a recession going on, for Christ's sake, and you're asking people to spend. I mean, I think a dollar or two people could deal with, but when they suddenly said, oh, yeah, $5 more.
Yeah, because when you think about $5, it's not that much more money, but it's something about, there's always something that clicks in your head when you hear, like, a five.
Yeah.
And you're just like, eh.
Yeah. And I don't know what it's like in New York and Chicago and the bigger cities.
Oh, God, like, I know people in.
It's like $30.
I know people who live in New York City, right? And they're in New York City. They, like, for example, when, what was the. Last year, The Green Hornet. The Green Hornet was the big 3D film. I know people who say, like, yeah, I could not find The Green Hornet in 2D.
You can't, because they're stopping doing it. And I think that's starting to hurt them, because people are saying, well, I'll just wait till it comes out on Blu-ray. Because the window's so small. But if they want to see the movie, because here's the thing. For example, if you're going to go on a date, it's like $30 just to get in the door.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, or like myself, if you're going, you can go see a movie in Columbus, Ohio. The going rate for a movie is $9 to $9.50, depending on, sometimes a little bit.
Buffalo's $9. I think it's like,
yeah. You can go with a $10 bill and get change and get a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that for 3D. And it's not because of 3D. I think the novelty of 3D is worn off, that people aren't going to see anything in 3D. But I think there are people that are, I mean, but people aren't saying, I don't want to see it because it's in 3D. They're saying, I don't want to see it because I don't want to spend $4 or $5 extra for it.
Right.
That's I think it's having an impact. And I think you'll see that price come back down.
What won this past weekend?
This is what's interesting, is Hall Pass won. They were predicting Romeo and Juliet.
Process that one. But it won with what? 15, right?
It was 13. Romeo and Juliet was $13.4 million. Hall Pass ended up $13.5 million and change. Neither of those numbers are good. It's a good number for third week of release for Romeo and Juliet, but that's terrible numbers for Hall Pass.
Yeah,
I mean this is the Farrelly brothers, and it was just such a bad movie. It was awful. I laughed once, and you got to see the blonde hot doctor from Scrubs. You got to see her tits. Not really? Not Sarah Chalk, but the Australian one at the last.
I don't know
season.
Who that is. So.
Oh, she's beautiful.
Yeah. So this week, I think Rango.
Rango.
Done.
Yeah, Rango. Rango.
I think there's... if I had to break it down, it's going to be Rango, then maybe followed by the Adjustment Bureau. Maybe.
I think it's going to be Rango, the Adjustment Bureau. And then, like, Beastly and Take Me Home Tonight, I think are going to be, like, running a horse race with Romeo and Juliet.
They're
going to
be running a horse race. No, they're going to be running a horse race for, like, fifth. You know?
Well, no, wait. Hold on a second. The other movies capped out at $13.5 million last week. I mean, even if they drop only 30%, you're still looking at a $10 million. I mean, everything is, I think, going to be fighting for that $10 million spot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to be...
The only reason I think Justin Vieira's got a shot second is because Matt Damon's in it. That's it.
I think it'll do well at second, but I think it's going to be a distant second. I think Rango's going to be like 35, 40 million maybe. Because people were just like crawling over each other to get to the screening. And
were
it's
really?
Huge with kids. I mean, the kids...
I don't get it. I mean, I understand crawling over for your kids, but they're like... adults without kids, as movie viewers who are trying, who are begging to see this movie. I'm like, why?
Well, I think it has that appeal to both kids, and it's a smart, grown up movie. You know, grown ups can appreciate it. I think that's going to really play in its favor. And there's nothing else out there. Really, I mean, the only other thing is Romeo and Juliet. That's burned out. That's been out for 3 weeks at at the number one, number two, and. What's left? You know, Justin Bieber? Huh? Yeah, I am number four.
By the way, I didn't get to see Drive Angry because of Justin Bieber. So.
I know.
So pissed about that.
So you went and saw Justin Bieber instead and screamed?
No. Well, for those that don't know, I live in Buffalo, so I go to school in Buffalo, so I'm here right now. And the only theater I can go to has 9 auditoriums, only one of which is 3D ready.
Yeah.
So, they're like, we can pull out Bieber and put in Nicolas Cage, or we can make another $20 million. make another $10,000 on Bieber.
Yeah.
So, what are they going to do?
Bieber, in its third week of release, made almost twice as much as Drive Angry in its first week of release.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. Anyways, we now have a voicemail. So, let's listen to that really quickly.
Fact, guys, it's Chris again. Hopefully this voice message won't sound like it's coming from a tin can like my last one did. Anyway, my question is, now that the Oscars are, by the time you see this, the Oscars will probably be over, it seems like biopics and people portraying characters that exist in real life, like James Franco playing Aaron Ralston or Colin Firth in The King's Speech, always seem to be almost a shoo-in for the Academy Awards. Well, my question is for you is, if you could see one biopic, which person would it be and who would you want to play them? Hopefully you guys can answer that. Thanks for answering my last one. We'll be calling back later. Bye.
All right, Meryl, what do you think? What biopic do you want? I know you had a long answer for this.
Well, first of all, I would love to see the Kevin Carr biopic starring Frank Caliendo.
Frank Caliendo? No, John Travolta from like... From Paris with Love, he would be my doppelganger.
Really? another one I'd love to see is Charlie Sheen, but I don't know who I'd want to play.
Charlie Sheen would be Charlie Sheen. Taking intravenous Charlie Sheen drugs.
He's high on Charlie Sheen right now. He's bi-winning, sir.
No one else could play Charlie Sheen because their face would melt. And their children would be crying over your exploded body.
And of course, so those are two of the fake answers. The real answer is, I'd love to see a Vince McMahon.
Wait, before you go on, I have one more thing. The funny thing about Charlie Sheen, somebody I know on Twitter and Facebook had put on their own Facebook page the things he tweeted out because he just started on Twitter.
Yeah,
and like there's a picture of him with an Oscar cake.
Yeah,
I didn't recognize because they were just on her Facebook account.
Right.
And I looked at it. I didn't recognize that as Charlie Sheen. And then I went to the next one, and it was him with Brie Olson and the Pitt Chooser. What does it say about me that I didn't recognize that it was Charlie Sheen, but damn it, the second I looked at him, I'm like, hey, look, Brie Olson, the porno star.
That's a good question. But the real answer is I'd love to see a Vince McMahon biopic. The guy who runs WWE. Yeah. Like, that guy has had a lot of really interesting life.
You can say shit.
Okay, that guy. No, he hasn't had a shitty life though. I was gonna say.
Well, no, you're stuttering. I don't know if you're channeling, you know, George or Albert, King Albert.
But I'd love to see a biopic about his rise to fame with WWE.
Who would play him?
That's what I couldn't figure out. Is I really don't know who could play Vince McMahon because because Vince McMahon not only plays
Topher Grace.
He's not only himself, but he plays a character of himself when he goes out into the ring.
When you look at him, because whenever he wears like a crew neck shirt or something that shows his chest muscles,
yeah.
He looks like he's going to burst vessels.
He does.
It's kind of scary, actually.
But yeah, so that's my answer. I don't know who could play Vince McMahon. Like,
I don't know.
Like, I really don't know who could play that. But there's the thing. You know, if they made it, it'd be under the WWE Films brand, and they would get, and it would suck because
it would star John Cena. I do not lie.
It's true.
Who
would you want to see a biopic of?
I'd love to see a biopic of Kurt Vonnegut.
Who?
Are you... Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You don't even know who Kurt Vonnegut is?
No.
He's a writer. He died a couple years ago, but he was a famous writer. He got his start in science fiction, but he then started to do very sort of like speculative, weird stuff. And he wrote Slaughterhouse-Five is what he's most famous for.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote Cat's Cradle. Did you see The Recruit?
The Colin Farrell movie?
Colin Farrell.
That movie, yes.
Okay, the whole Ice Nine reference.
Right.
That references a Kurt Vonnegut book. It's a science fiction book called Cat's Cradle.
Oh.
He wrote in the 50s.
Cute.
Or 60s. I don't know. I don't know when he wrote it, but... And he wrote Breakfast of Champions, which is a fantastic novel. But he's got a really interesting life because he's so cynical, and he was in the army, and he was at the bombing of Dresden, and just his life on how it went. And I think it would be great if they made the Kurt Vonnegut. If you've read Vonnegut, I know you haven't, but if you have read Vonnegut, what they should do is they should make it. Told in the Vonnegut style, in this very short vignette, unstuck in time kind of way, would be brilliant. And then, like, make him a character in his own books, just like Kilgore Trout was. Now, who would play him? I don't know. I mean, it would. I would love to see. I don't know. You know who would be a really interesting? Would be like Crispin Glover as Kurt Vonnegut. Anyone who knows Kurt Vonnegut. He would be a very interesting. You don't want to necessarily cast somebody who would look like him because he kind of looks like Alfred the Butler from the original Batman TV show in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever watched that,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's who I'd say. Go on.
You know what I'm more interested? Oh, were you not done?
Oh, I was just gonna say, or a biopic of me starring John Travolta, or a biopic of Meryl starring Chris Penn.
No, starring Michael Cera.
Michael Cera and Jesse Eisenberg, and just like change him, you know, from scene to scene and see if anyone notices.
No, it couldn't be. It had to be Michael Cera because Michael Cera actually looks like me, which is scary.
Well, the whole
Michael,
joke is
I'm
that,
a fatter Michael Cera.
The joke is that Jesse Eisenberg and Michael Cera get mixed up all
the time. Yeah, I know. That would be interesting. Just imagine Michael Cera sitting in front of a computer podcast. He'd have to put on like 50 pounds.
They should have like Taylor Lautner play you.
I'm more interested in the... going off the jokiness for a second, I am surprised that there are some people who have yet to receive biopics, like Walt Disney. Like, how is that doing not have a biopic yet?
Well, because is Paramount going to do the Walt Disney biopic? They would be sued so fast. And the only one who could do the Walt Disney biopic would be the Walt Disney Company. And I don't think they want to do it because to make a biopic interesting, you have to have the ups and downs. And the Disney Company doesn't want to focus on, I mean, not that he was doing anything inappropriate, not like he's going to shoot up heroin and like raping 12-year-olds or anything like that. But there's an image of Disney that the Disney Company wants to preserve, and you don't want to. It's almost like you don't want to humanize him too much because he is an icon. Have you ever been to a Disney park or something? He's an icon. Yeah. He's a god.
He's a false god.
Well, yeah. He could be played by Michael Cera.
Yeah.
Was there another one you had? Or
No, not really. Okay. Yeah.
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 All right, let's do the Fat Guy Five.
Miller, the Neil Miller biopic, maybe?
The Neil Miller biopic, starring Horatio Sanz after he gains weight and puts on, grows a beard.
Oh my God, you know what actually would make a good biopic? Harry Knowles. That'd be a good biopic.
Yes.
No?
Yeah, well, you know, he would, but you could like get like Michael McShane, like a younger version of Michael McShane to do it. Or get Jonah Hill. You'd have to get fat again. Or get Seth Rogen.
They could just get Ethan Suplee to do it. He did it once already.
That's true. A Lucas biopic would be kind of interesting.
Maybe. Yeah. All right, so Fat Guy 5.
Fat Guy 5, yeah. This is in honor of Rango. We were originally going to do with Meryl's suggestion of sort of like the...
And it actually wasn't a bad suggestion.
It was a good suggestion, the movies that take place over one night, but I couldn't think of any... enough of them that I thought were good.
Beyond Superbad.
Superbad. Stuff like in honor of Take Me Home Tonight. Superbad was it, but I'm like, I hated Dazed and Confused. I hated I Love You, Beth Cooper. The only ones that I could think of that all took place over that one night, I'm like, I didn't like them that much.
Yeah.
So I said, in honor of Rango, five fun westerns. Because one of the things I loved about Rango was it was a western. Mm-hmm. It was just a good old-fashioned western story, and it was fun to watch. And I like fun westerns because usually if you've watched enough movies, especially recently, when they have a western, it's always this brooding heavy western. Something like Appaloosa or
310
to Yuma. Yogi Bear. What?
Have you ever seen the internet short?
Oh, yes, the assassination of Boo Boo.
Jesse James Ripoff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's always these like heavy duty movies. Even True Grit. As much as I like the remake of True Grit, it still kind of went to that real heavy, you know. I like good old fashioned fun westerns, and so I said here these are five fun westerns, and these are all mine because Meryl doesn't see westerns apparently.
I'm not gonna.
To your defense, you were born in the late 80s. I mean, you just barely squeaked by.
First of all, I was born in June of 89.
Yeah, you only got like it's sort of you got those 6 months of the 80s,
which I don't.
Yeah, because you were pooping yourself and sucking on your mommy's boobs. Wow. Anyways, I don't know if she breastfed or not. I wasn't there.
Neither do I. I never asked.
You never asked? Nope. She'd be like, "Oh yeah, I breastfed you till you were six," and she's like, "That was an awkward time in first grade." anyways, the first one of the five fun westerns, the original True Grit. Which is a lot more tongue-in-cheek and funnier than you'd imagine. It's also very serious at times, but it's even more lighthearted than the remake.
The remake was lighthearted. I don't know why.
It was, but it was. But this one's even, because it was the 60s and it was a little bit...
60s, it didn't take a lot seriously.
Yeah, well, westerns were also a commodity back then, so they made these movies and they could have a little more fun with it because there are tons of westerns made, you know. And the westerns didn't suddenly just start disappearing until the 70s.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of the 70s, the next one is Catlow, which is a much forgotten western. It stars Yul Brynner as a gunfighter, but he's sort of like an anti-hero. He's like a Robin Hoody kind of thing, where he's a bad guy, but he's really kind of the good guy, and they're going after him. What's also neat about it is it stars Leonard Nimoy. as a villain, it's one of his favorite movies because it was in the time where he couldn't get work to save his life because everyone remembered him as Spock.
Right.
So Catlow's good. That was like 1971.
Mm-hmm.
Silverado. Ooh. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Not from start to finish. But I've seen it.
It's a neat movie. First of all, the cast is amazing. It's got so many freaking people. It's like John. It's got the big name. It's got Scott Glenn.
Was
Kevin Kline.
Mel Brooks movie?
No. You're thinking of something else. It's another one that's on the list.
Okay.
But yeah, Silverado. It's a good old fashioned western story. It's just a western. It has like John Cleese as the sheriff. It's got all these. Kevin Costner shows up in it. It's a huge. It's directed by Lawrence Kasdan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was made in the mid '80s.
Mm-hmm.
Neat movie. I'll let you do the next one since you sort of you said, well, what about this one? I'm like, well, that was already on the list.
But. I didn't mean to shut this. Back to the Future Part 3. It's barely a western.
it's totally a western.
Well, I mean, it takes place in the Old West, yes, and I mean, it's using the western as a story device, but it's not like it's purposely set in the western. It's just like, because Marty McFly goes back in time to
It's
the,
totally a Western.
Is it?
It's, yeah, it is. Well, okay. I mean, it's a science fiction movie.
Mm-hmm.
But
see,
I mean,
that's
it's
what
just
I'm saying,
as much.
It doesn't, like... Like, at one Rango, point, he Rango's is floating freaking, on a hoverboard, you know?
Well, but Rango's a freaking chameleon, for crying out loud. But it's totally a Western.
Okay.
Yeah. You know?
So, yeah. So, Back to the Future Part 3. I mean, who... Do I really have to say anything on Back to the Future Part 3
that was,
not
what
already
was
been said?
Well, and I, when it came out, when the Blu-ray came out in October,
mm-hmm.
and I watched all three of them with my kids.
Did
and
they
I
like
watched
it?
Oh, yeah, they loved it. And I watched the third one, and I'm like... I forgot how much I enjoyed this movie. It gets maligned a lot, sort of like by people like, oh, that wasn't the best one. I'm like, no, it was a lot of fun because it worked as that piece of the story, but it also was a fun Western. And
mm-hmm.
I'm like, they don't make fun Westerns. Everyone's trying to be all Clint Eastwood-y. And I mean, I love The Man with No Name, but and it has its place, but everything doesn't have to emulate that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I'll, you know, maybe we should ask a Western expert, get like Elizabeth Rapp to weigh in on this.
Mm-hmm. I was the wrong person to have on the show today.
That's right. I should have had Elizabeth. What the hell was I thinking? Because she knows her Westerns, damn it.
Moving on to the final one on the list. We said it already. Blazing
yes.
Saddles.
Blazing Saddles. Have you seen Blazing Saddles?
Again, not from start to finish, but I've seen all the key stuff.
You've seen the fart scene.
Yeah.
The Blazing Saddles, it's such an awesome Mel Brooks movie. It's one of his best ones. My favorite's Young Frankenstein. But Blazing Saddles was great. Of course, it was made in 1974, so it was when Westerns were still remembered. But suddenly Blazing Saddles came out, and then they didn't make any Westerns anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
I wonder why.
But an awesome one. Actually, you wonder why? The answer comes in the honorable mentions. The honorable mention being Star Wars. Because back in the 70s, back in 77 when it came out, a lot of people pointed out, hey, this is just a Western, only it takes place in space. It's on the frontier. It's, you know, this sort of rogue gunfighter, and they got the corrupt politician, and they're trying to save somebody from the town. It's totally a Western.
Mm-hmm.
And the cavalry comes running in at the end. You know, I mean, it is, you know, they blow up by shooting stuff down a manufactured portal that's about the size of a womp rat. I'm sorry, that's not a Western cliche. But yeah, Star Wars. Also, a lot of people say, you know, it's a takeoff on The Hidden Fortress by Kurosawa.
Well, they say it's a takeoff. Like you look at the movie, it steals ideas from everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
the Empire is based on Nazi Germany. The lightsabers are based on samurai samurai fighting teachings.
I wouldn't say they steal it. He borrows. And if you read, like, Joseph Campbell's stuff, he basically says everybody steals from something else.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... And he uses Star Wars as examples of modern hero
mm-hmm.
stories. But also, everything that Kurosawa did was all a Western anyways. It was just with samurais.
Right.
So.
And they're also talking about the other way around. Like, The Magnificent Seven is a remake of the Seven Samurai.
I thought it was a remake of A Bug's Life.
Sure.
I'm just teasing.
I know.
All right. We got to go to a break.
Woohoo.
Ta-ta.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We're now in the fourth segment, and it's time, ladies and gentlemen, for the world famous DVD roundup. See how come you get it? How come this show gets
no.
a Skywalker sound effect with the idiot boxes, which I told you forever to come up with the sound effect for?
You know what's funny is this is the cheapest sound effect ever because I just go, and I don't even we can't even do it for the idiot boxers. We don't have the budget. Sorry, it's just not there. You don't have any DVDs this week, do you?
Well, you took them all.
Well, I said you could have some if you want. Do you want to? And you're like, no, I don't have anything. Well,
because you said you were taking them, so I didn't want to impose.
No, I just had them on the list because they
okay.
were... Which one do you want to highlight?
127 Hours.
Okay,
Loved that movie. It was my second favorite movie of the year. It was... you know what? All I have to say is go listen to the Satellite Spotlight I did with Ash on Danny Boyle.
Which is almost it's almost obscene to hear kind of the grunts and groans about how much you love Danny Boyle. No, I loved 127 Hours. It was a good movie. Is there anything else you want to point out?
Love and Other Drugs, where you get to see a crap load of Anne Hathaway.
Did you see what I tweeted out when I got sent my review copy?
No.
It they had a warrant. They said they had a. It was actually kind of a clever way of packaging it. They had like a prescription right out in the on the address label, mm-hmm. and then it said warning includes many scenes of really good looking people frolicking around naked. Thanks to Anne Hathaway and Jake Gyllenhaal. I'm like, I think it's brilliant that Fox found a way to put on the packaging of the UPS box so the critic can be like, yes, I'm opening this, I'm going to watch it, because it's got a naked Anne Hathaway in it.
Did you watch it?
Not yet. But I'm going to this week. I just got it like today. Okay. It came around. So I'm going to watch it. But that's out there. Definitely worth checking out. Other ones, Faster. I know you don't like Faster, but that's out there. Burlesque. Or Burlicue.
Did not see that. Where's Fozzie when you need him?
Oh, Fozzie. I took a picture of that and tweeted it out and said, hey, Fozzie Bear, look what I got. Ha, 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 ha. And he was mad.
Well, did you see his tweet? Because he was like, I went to 3 Blockbusters. None of them had them. No wonder they're going out of business.
So Burlesque. I liked Burlesque. I was surprised. So sue me. I liked it. It's totally ridiculous, but it's a fun movie.
The Golden Globe nominated Burlesque.
The music's not bad. People make fun of it because of the music's not bad. It's a heck of a lot better than Country Strong. Good God. There's also Bambi Diamond Edition. It's the first time ever on Blu-ray.
Does it look good on Blu-ray? Because the commercials I've seen would still look good. Just they didn't feel right. But I guess
Well, here's the thing. First of all, if you're watching commercials, it's compressed. So, you know, the Blu-ray is going to be 1080p. And when they restored it for the DVD release they did a couple of years ago, they like scanned it in at like 20,000 lines of resolution, I think, because they basically said we want to have it preserved. So they scanned it in at a resolution greater than the film that was put on. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, it looks good. All the Disney stuff looks great. It does the Disney views. It also puts the blocks on the side, so you don't get the black bars. It has sort of like
I would I hate that. Just give me the black bars are better because they don't obscure my viewing experience. Well, like I just accept that space doesn't exist in the film.
You always they give you choices. You can
do they watch it. Can you choose black bars? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I believe you can on Bambi. The other Blu-rays, I know you can. I know Fantasia. I watched that not too long ago, and you could choose to watch it just with the 4:3 or with the widescreen bars. A couple other ones: Beyblade Metal Fusion, which is a TV show. It's like a Pokemon kind of TV show. I requested it for my kids. I'm watching it. My brain's exploding because it's just like a Pokemon show. But
did
it's
you watch
any
week. Of the old Pokemon shows?
I watched some, but again, my brain exploded. Then there was three I want to highlight that I got a little late, but they're on Blu-ray. Moonstruck on Blu-ray, Rain Man on Blu-ray, and Last Tango in Paris on Blu-ray. Moonstruck was surprisingly good. I saw it when I was, like a date dragged me when I was in high school, and I hated it.
Which
and now
is
that
better,
I'm closer
which
to
is better,
40,
Moonstruck or Drive Angry?
Well, totally different movies. I can't even begin
they're
to
They're both Nicolas Cage.
Them. Well, so what?
Can I plug the spotlight where Ian and Hash just get into a huge fight over Nicolas Cage this
I
week?
Think you just did. Anyways, Last Tango in Paris was boring. I'm just like, it was such the whole, oh, isn't this dangerous? It's an NC-17 movie, and I'm watching this, and I'm like, this is just, it's doing stuff to be daring, and it was just boring. Rain Man's cool, although the transfer looks kind of weird. Stinker of the Week, Deepak Chopra's Grow Younger, Live Longer.
Anything with a title over 6 words either is the worst, more than not is the worst movie ever, or it is really good.
It's also anything that has Deepak Chopra in it, because it wouldn't be so bad if he didn't look so doggone old on the cover box.
Who is Deepak Chopra?
he's a self help. He's what the Love Guru was based on, kind of. Sort
wow.
of. Well, sort of, not really, but anyways,
sort of, not really, actually, maybe not.
Anyways, review wrap up. The Adjustment Bureau and Rango, I both said those rocked. Beastly sucked. Take Me Home Tonight, have yet to find that out. I will know. You can check back at the movie site
next week.
Oh my gosh! Thank you. What did you just turn into? Battle Los Angeles is out. Mars Needs Moms, which looks like the creepiest, the most uncanny of the uncanny valleys you're ever going to see. And Red Riding Hood, Catherine Hardwicke.
Twilight 2.0.
Twilight director does werewolves again.
Well, no, because she didn't do werewolves. That's right. Because she didn't do the second one.
She didn't get werewolves. Yeah. Couldn't even handle the vampires. Anyways, check us out. Fat Guys in the Movies. You can find all the Meryl stuff up there, too. And we will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.